The world around us is changing rapidly. Fundraisers and nonprofit marketers like you have to be flexible and innovative to continue to overcome the challenges you face. We're Pursuant, and we're here to provide you with the tools, insights, and strategies you need to get you where you want to go. You're tuned in to the Pursuant Listening Experience. What's the first thing that comes to mind when you hear the phrase AI? If you thought about artificial intelligence or the 2001 Steven Spielberg movie, that's not what we're talking about today. I recently sat down with our CEO, Trent Ricker, and EVP of Analytics, Insights, and Experience, Hillary Noon, to discuss augmented intelligence. In a nutshell, augmented intelligence blends human instincts and data to create more personal and relevant, and ultimately human, experiences for your donors. Hey, Trent. Hey, Hillary. How are you guys doing this afternoon?
Great. Thanks,
Great. Leah. Thanks, Leah.
Yeah, glad to have you. So I'm really excited about our discussion today because this is a conversation we have a lot with our clients here at Pursuant. And it's something that we wanted to capture, this thinking, because we think it's important for nonprofits to shift their mindset when it comes to how they apply data to their decisions. And so we just wanted to have kind of a fun conversation with the two of you, because these are things that you kind of breathe every single day. And so without further ado, why don't we just jump right in? So when we're thinking about this topic of augmented intelligence, maybe before we define what we mean when we say augmented intelligence for nonprofits, maybe let's back up and look at how are big businesses like Amazon, Netflix, Airbnb, and Waze using data and intelligence to learn more about their customers?
Yeah, I'll kick this off. I think, you know, data is so important in everybody's lives, and we all know it inherently as consumers that interact with big brands all the time. I think there's two sides to data. Sometimes people appropriately get concerned about the privacy issues and how data is used in a way that might otherwise be, you know, nefarious and kind of creepy, if you will, you know, the darker side of kind of being nosy. But I think for the most part, big brands do a great job of using relevant data to give you a better experience. And I think, you know, more macro, I think the general consuming, you know, consumer public doesn't have a full appreciation for how frequently data and therefore then the application of intelligence is used on a day-to-day basis. I remember going back, and Hillary probably got some similar stories, you know, way back when Amazon was doing, remember they're just a bookstore and it was, you know, if you bought this book, you'd like that book, right? You know, and you get these great emails that were really just matching through tags that if you were into underwater basket weaving or whatever your hobby was, that they would suggest other similar books. And people generally find that, I think, very helpful in their consumer experiences. But I think as data has obviously changed and the amount of data that's available, the supplemental data that a business can add, clearly a lot more sophisticated. But people don't necessarily think of it. And in a minute here, we'll talk about how that applies to the nonprofit space, because it can be very intimidating. But we as consumers, day in and day out, and we'll go through some examples on that, I think are using, are at least getting timely and relevant and personalized messaging that's based upon really smart application of data. But Hillary, you probably have some stories like that from the early memories of what was kind of the application of data to have a better consumer experience.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we're seeing in the Amazon example with the books, I remember that first experience and being so impressed. And now it's kind of permeated a lot of other industries, and you get used to it and you start to expect it as a consumer, right? The nitty-gritty behind that is, I think, what we want to shine a light on today, which, you know, the piece that they have working in the machinery behind the scenes is that they are learning about you with every purchase, with every engagement, with every step that you take on the website. That data is being collected and it's feeding into a model that is learning and is all the time is kind of growing in its ability to get to know you, which then leads to more and more personalized communication, right? Which is what we strive to be able to do for our clients too within nonprofits. So I think as we look at those examples, it's learning from the information and doing it in a way, at least if it's done right, it's learning so that it can create a better experience for you, not just to be creepy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that there's, you look at some of the creepy examples, and I don't know if it's really creepy, but I noticed a couple iterations ago of the iOS releases that they were, that Apple, I think, had turned on your patterns of where you might go and when. And when I remember one of my first experiences that I was kind of thinking it was creepy, was it would suggest at a certain time when I would typically leave the office how many minutes it was to get home. Because it knew most frequently at Tuesday afternoon around 6 o'clock, I might leave the office. And I really didn't, that didn't necessarily sit as well for me because it didn't really feel that that's one of those areas where I felt like I would want to engage when I'm ready to engage with technology to have it help me rather than it kind of being suggestive. So I think that, you know, there's great, you know, for the most part, I think there's a lot more power that can come from a stronger consumer experience through getting timely, relevant, and personalized information through smart learning from data. But I think what you pointed out too, Hillary, is the sophistication of machine learning has come so far that has no human interaction to it. Yet we believe, and I think this is, you know, part of the reason for this podcast is to talk more. You hear about machine learning and artificial intelligence, and then we talk about augmented intelligence. And we really believe that the augmented part in bringing the human element to supplement so that you don't make those, I think, unnecessary or creepy suggestions, because particularly when it comes to philanthropy, it's so relational and personal. Nobody, I think, in our space that I've talked to wants to trust a machine to do its donor asks or stewardship on its behalf. That doesn't mean we wouldn't use business rules to have an automated thank you, but that's very different than using machine learning and then kind of setting it off on itself. And it's, you know, how out there, wasn't that from Space Odyssey, or wasn't, you know, just doing things for you. We want to make sure that we're talking about augmented.
Yeah, I love this example that you bring up of like, so there are certain business practices that we want to adopt because they're best practices that save nonprofits or can potentially save nonprofits time and resources while also making things more personal for their donors. So I'd love to dig a little bit more into what's kind of this difference between artificial intelligence versus augmented intelligence. And then I want to take that into what are some specific ways that we actually apply this to philanthropy.
I think one of the cool conversations Hillary and I were having not long ago had to do with an application that some of us are familiar with, many of us, is Waze, right? So if you take Google Maps, which I'd used for years, and I still do, Google Maps is taking machine learning and taking the data from people who are on the roads, whether they're using Google Maps or not, you're giving it permission to track your kind of the traffic patterns and whether traffic's moving slowly or not. So it does this great deal of saying, I want to get from point A to point B, and here's the fastest route. When we look at Waze has a component in it that is interactive, and people participate in that by, you know, validating whether there's a car on the side of the road or there's a police officer with a radar detection or whatever else it might be. That makes the experience better because the human element of people driving supplement that data. And I think we've got some thoughts, and Hillary, you know, curious in your thoughts on this, but when you think about philanthropy and the application of some of that, there are people day in and day out. We can take a data set of people's donation behavior or constituent behavior. They volunteer, they donate, they participate in events. But they're also interacting in certain ways. Did they show up for a particular event? Did they click on a particular link in an email that could give us indication of where their interests might otherwise be? And, you know, Hillary, I'd be interested in your thoughts on that, because I think as we apply it to the nonprofit space, what's the Waze-like features where we're actually not just taking the machine learning and say, well, what's the libunts and the sibunts and what's, you know, predictive from wealth screening that somebody might be able to ask for a larger gift this year than last year because they are now in a different wealth category. There's interactions in the nonprofit space. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, most of the time when you can capture those interactions, which face it, we have varying degrees of success of doing different organizations. But when you do, and you're able to demonstrate a kind of cumulative effect of being involved in multiple ways, whether that's consuming more information of different varieties or it's volunteering, advocating, donating, the cumulative effect of those things almost always means higher average gift, higher lifetime value. So the more you can start to capture and represent that information and then also bring in the human experience of what kind of experience might somebody like that want to have with the organization? And typically, a machine wouldn't be able to do that for you. They can spit out they can elevate something and bring that up and say, this person meets this criteria, and we've learned more about them. but it's the gift officer, it's the development director, it's the consultant, whomever is helping to craft that experience that starts to bring in the ways like recommendations of actually you want to avoid this particular approach because the donor won't respond well to that.
Right. Because if they're interacting in a certain way, whether that's maybe they're interacting through a digital channel or that this person might show a proclivity to answer their phone, for instance, you know, if we're capturing that sort of data, then you might say, this would be a better person to reach by phone. They might prefer that. I remember one of the earlier offerings that Pursuant had years back. We still do it to a different iteration, but really funny when I think back to early predictive modeling, but it really had some augmented intelligence approach to it. We called it our Charitable Partners Program. And what we would do is we would do some screening. And again, remember, there's usually three buckets of data. There's a bucket of data that comes from a nonprofit organization that's the giving history or any other constituent interactions that they capture, right? There's third-party data. So what used to be kind of fairly pedestrian wealth screening, today through partners like Axiom or Experian or others, there's, boy, I mean, Hillary, how many data points can we get? Thousands, I think, if I'm not mistaken. For our work, we usually limit to the ones that we think are most relevant, but there's a zillion data points on individuals. And then that third one is really the data that you can't buy, and that has less to do with specific donor activity or even constituent engagement. And that might be, take a higher ed example, you know, were they in Greek life? Did they participate in intramurals? What was their major? Those are things that obviously are proprietary to an extent to a university. When you start to blend that data together, then you can start to then inform better modeling. One of the things that we did in the Charitable Partners Program is we would create a segment. And as we created that segment and sent both pieces of mail and emails out, I only wish that there was a way that the United States Postal Service could tell you if somebody opened a piece of mail, but they haven't figured out how to do that yet. Maybe we figure that out with a little chip or something. But we did know who opened emails, and we did know who clicked on what, and we did know who were watching videos. And it really stood to reason that somebody, if there were 10 people that were all created equal from a segment, you know, if three of them actually opened the email and two of them began to watch the video and one of them finished the video and then actually watched it again a second time, but you can only talk to one, you talk to the one that was most engaged. But that goes back to, again, the personal element of then pointing that gift officer to the one person who's most likely out of those 10 to be responsive to your messaging. And even furthermore, if they clicked on particular links that had something to do with, you know, let's say again, for the university, it might've had something to do with a building, or it might've had something to do with part of a campaign that was going to be for research, then you could have a relevant conversation with them. And those are the earlier markers, kind of like, I think with Amazon, you bought this book, you might be interested in those. I think for the nonprofit space that, you know, from data capture to business intelligence, then this artificial intelligence, machine learning, augmented intelligence, it can get pretty confusing out there. But we're trying to simplify that. And I think part of this podcast today is to kind of demystify all these big phrases, because really it's about making it accessible, applicable, and impactful.
Yeah, you know, in the spirit of, you know, kind of trying to demystify some of these phrases, I did go to Gartner's website. Hopefully many of our listeners are familiar with Gartner. But I thought they did a nice job of breaking down or defining this area of augmented intelligence, because it is a really growing space. Obviously, we've taken it on for the work we do with nonprofits, but it's something that commercial entities are also finding as they have pushed artificial intelligence and have realized that the human touch, the human aspect and context is so important. You can't just kind of let the machine run by itself. So couple of the words that I just wanted to call out here because I thought were pretty important. The definition says a human-centered partnership model of people and artificial intelligence working together, which I like that. And I think you just, if we just break it down to those words, it resonates a lot, I think, with us in this industry, because mm-hmm. we believe in the, in fact, sometimes to our own fault, right? Because we believe in kind of the messages we tell ourselves in a lot of, or maybe it's a board member that has a strong opinion about something. That human has a lot of emphasis on decisions that we make. And there's been a lot of movement, I think, in our industry towards data-driven and analytics and that sort of thing. And now only starting to dip our toe in the water of artificial intelligence. And so I think our caution is, let's not leave that human element behind, because it's really important.
Yeah, I would even say that I can't think of many industries where the human element isn't more important, right? Yeah. I mean, again, I run into it time and again when you talk to folks in our industry and you talk about the intimidating phrases like business intelligence, artificial intelligence, machine learning. Augmented softens it, and it should, because to that end, we believe it pursuant that everyone should experience the joy of giving. The joy of giving can be as little as giving a small gift online all the way up to a, you know, meaningful legacy gift. More often than not, though, the journey that is giving, and as people select philanthropic priorities, their passion for those causes becomes one by which is very personal and relational. And I believe you can never really remove that. Artificial intelligence and data can actually help us to prioritize and otherwise leverage limited resources, which is another known factor, obviously, the nonprofit space. We're called on to be very good stewards of our resources. You know, I think about a lot of organizations that might be mission-based, and we sometimes remind ourselves that the fees they might pay someone like Pursuant are made up of many $50 gifts from 68-year-old ladies that love that mission, and they're entrusting us to do a great job to raise more money and or for that organization to make a great impact against their mission and invested wisely. So with that, you've got to be smart with resources. And we really believe that through data, through augmented intelligence, to prioritize and be more resourceful, that we can point people in the right direction. But ultimately, the storytelling and or the relational engagement is the difference maker, I think, in philanthropy, much more so than any other commercial entities that we'd otherwise be talking about. You're even seeing high ticket items like cars. Used to be buying a car was very relational. Now some people can say, boy, I want to do everything I can to not have human interaction in buying a car. I'll even buy it online, have it delivered to my home. And if I don't like it, that they'll come pick it up in 30 days. Think about that. That's a huge shift in a commercial sector where I don't know that philanthropy will ever really get to that point. I don't know that it will. Mm-hmm. Certainly not as you, the bigger, the more zeros that you have on the gift. I just don't see that happening.
Hey there, if you're enjoying this episode, feel free to head over to pursuant.com/podcast resources to grab our latest free fundraising resources. We update the page weekly, so be sure to check back regularly to get free fundraising ebooks, webinars, and other resources designed with fundraisers like you in mind.
Trent and Hillary, something that I've been kind of percolating on while you've been speaking is this idea of the way that data and augmented intelligence can actually change our assumptions about what the donor looks like, and specifically the donor at different levels of what we call the giving pyramid. And the reason I've been thinking about this is because I've noticed this trend in commercial advertising of the social good component. More and more, you're seeing big brands saying, you know, hey, we're partnering with this nonprofit, we're partnering with this organization, because they're trying to, I think, kind of siphon away some of the goodwill that those nonprofits have and apply it towards to maybe kind of soften some of the cold, heartless aspects of what it is to be a for-profit business. But what I notice about that is the kind of consumer they're going after, to me, seems like a much different consumer than maybe the kind of person a nonprofit would consider as being a good candidate for a gift. And I don't know if you have any compelling thoughts to add to that, but it's something I've just been kind of thinking of as a bit of a gap or a lag that I see. I wonder if you have any responses to that.
I might just chime in and say, I think what you're talking about is basically the changing face of our donor population in addition to the general population. I mean, predominantly still the large givers are boomers and matures, and like kind of the older generation are still the ones who are writing most of the bigger checks. But that is shifting. And as our Gen X and our millennials start to come into that time in their lives where they're more affected by whether it be a disease or a particular social issue, and they are at a place where they have more disposable income, you're seeing that shift in terms of who's giving and what they're giving to and how they're giving. And I think we're going to see that even more so as we get the populations that are growing up now, because they are also looking very different. They're not the same as the, what did you call it, Trent, the 68-year-old older lady?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, sometimes that's the profile. That's a good point, right?
It's a yeah. changing dynamic, and that right. donor, that young donor, doesn't want to give in the same way that their grandparents.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, because I think that the demographic that might respond to direct mail in this day and age is a fairly predictable one, but it's not It doesn't have to be, because again, if you had the right target audience and you were to do something from direct mail that was targeted to a different generation, and I think you nailed that, Hillary. I think it's really important. Corporations are starting to see that, you know, they can, in good corporate social responsibility, they want to at least show their philanthropic side. What I think is important, because I think it's a dangerous game for brands. We see this all the time. If they pick the wrong cause, and I say wrong in air quotes that you can't see in the podcast, then first of all, there's no such thing as a wrong cause, but that can create brand friction. So again, let's use Amazon as an example. Amazon Smile is something that allows you to kind of choose your charity, and some portion of the purchase will go to the charity of your choice, and you're letting the consumer feel good about Amazon being philanthropic and they individually, with purchases they make, supporting a cause. But back to Hillary's point, the new data points, next generation donors want to give in different ways. And I think as we collect data for that, that's a great example. If I give through a particular channel, but that's not directly associated with that cause, and that cause can't capitalize on the data in order to continue the conversation, there's a gap. And the individual that gave the gift might actually want to learn more about that particular cause. They want to be stewarded. And again, it's where I kind of have a little bit of a, I think there's a chasm there with corporate social responsibility, because if I did go buy Tom's shoes and they're doing something nice, I'm getting some level of responsiveness with the stewardship of what they're doing. But if I wanted to give more deeply based upon my activity, what's the next desired action or the ultimate desired action? So I think the punchline there is that you've got to make sure that we call it strategic segmentation, that in a perfect world, you'd have some micro segmentation. Your messaging would almost be so micro to the specific variables of the constituent to maximize the response. Now, it's not practical yet in this day and age to be down to the one-to-one level, but I think that that's something that, you know, Hillary, wouldn't you agree? It's kind of like something we aspire to have that at some point, this micro messaging, but very difficult to attain. But you can, back in the old days, maybe from the shotgun approach of, you know, only a few segments through the mail, today we can talk to different strategic segments through various channels and with various messages that are most relevant to them.
Well, and I think along those lines, that's why it's so important that you have a continuously learning model at work, because not only do you need to make sure that you are learning about behaviors of your best donors, but also as your donor population evolves and changes, to Leah's earlier point, are you making sure that you're staying aware of that? Because your segmentation that you might have been using 5 years ago needs to evolve. Right. And so that is the beauty of a learning model, that it's constantly looking for new things, and the data points and the places we go to pull in that data are going to evolve as well. As we start to see more and more of these intermediaries, whether they be donor advised funds or corporations, yes, who are kind of taking on these hybrid models in order to raise their profile in their community. So I think that part of it, the modeling part and the science and that kind of artificial intelligence evolution is really a really important part of this. But so is then the human part and ensuring that we're continuing to bring that context to bear, because even as the face of the donor changes, the way we engage them also needs to change. And so our fundraisers are agencies that our clients work with, for example, like ourselves, how we then help them make those decisions about how to use the information, I think becomes even more important.
Yeah, and I would say we also have to implore upon the nonprofits to try to capture all the data that they can. Because in that case, if you use donor advised funds, if somebody's interacting with your nonprofit through giving a gift, but we're outsourcing, it's such a great example, if you're outsourcing the ask and you don't have the data as part of your file, then you're limited in how much you can actually learn about the constituent and custom tailor your ongoing kind of donor profile and the donor life cycle as it changes over the years. So I think we have to be careful of that. It's easier in these, you know, I think as times evolve, to say, wow, we got donor advised funds over here, and there's peer-to-peer events over here, and there's golf and gala over here, and there's direct mail program over here, and there's, you know, legacy program over here, and there's face-to-face and telemarketing. You really need to be conscientious of the stage in order to bring that data together so we can actually have a better, we used to call it back in the day, Convio, that, you know, constituent 360 profile, right? What's the full lens of your constituency? And frankly, that also goes beyond donating. It's advocating, volunteering, participating in an event, and any other interaction that they might have with the mission.
So another question that I was thinking about as you were speaking is, all of this sounds so sophisticated and so exciting, but it also sounds kind of expensive. How can your average nonprofit that has a small budget to invest in technology, how can they take advantage of something like this that, you know, if they've got it in their mind that this is only something that the most well-funded nonprofit could approach?
Well, I'll start because it's a complicated answer. I think that it's incumbent upon market leaders like Pursuant to do a lot of the R&D and to do some of the investment and make it accessible to larger nonprofits. I mean, it's part of the reason why we have been so strongly engaged in analytics, insights, and experience over the past several years and invested in technology as such, because I think you get to a critical mass and you can take some generalizations of donor behavior and begin to apply them at a point where entry-level analytics tools can be applicable to smaller nonprofits, and you can get more and more sophisticated as you have a larger file and are willing to invest in customized modeling. But you don't necessarily have to do that. You know, I do think that what we can learn and the way that we can have some level of predictive behavior related to who might be the appropriate segment or individuals that come in every day to interact with a new nonprofit that might be a better ask for sustaining giving, for monthly giving, or for a mid-level gift. And so some of that's just modeling, if you will. But I think the delineation between modeling as you then transcend up towards, micro segmentation, you know, along with that would come better results, but also higher expense. Our job at Pursuant is to, through scale, make the best of the features available to the broadest part of the market. And I think, you know, through our own R&D investment over the last few years, we've really been working hard at that to modularize our analytics tools and make them accessible to the broadest part of the market. But Hillary, you've got probably some thoughts as it relates to, you know, we want to demystify it, make it simple, get results, because at the end of the day, the same way that you're using Waze, you don't really care about all the algorithms. You just wanted to get you from point A to point B as efficiently as possible, and perhaps kind of interact to help the people that are behind you on the road as well, to make sure that they're going to get to their destination safely and efficiently as well.
You know, if I were to use the Waze analogy, I would say, you know, focus on where you're driving. Don't worry too much about other people right now. So like, to make it bite-sized. This doesn't have to be a massive implementation. You don't have to apply this approach to everything that you do. Pick a particular audience or a small target project and dip your toe in the water. Apply an AI model either through your own team or by partnering with a consultant like us, like Pursuant, and try it and test it in a way that you can then learn from it. And if it works, great. You can blow it out across a much bigger population. If it doesn't, you can go back and tweak it and evolve from there. So I think what, especially as nonprofit organizations, we tend to be risk averse because of the fact that we hold the public good, right? And we're funded by donors, and we have to be very cautious of that, which of course we understand. So in order to do that in a responsible way, but still allow you to grow and test something new, do it in a small way. Find a partner within your organization that will champion this and is interested in it. And honestly, right now during the pandemic, I would say that people are open to innovative ways of doing more with less. And this is the exact example of that. It's a great example of how you can apply some of the same things that we've been talking about for years, but do so in a much more efficient way and a much more effective way to bring in more donors, raise the average gift, and keep more donors.
And I think what we've invested in and we're really proud to have released earlier this year in the Pursuant Giving DNA platform is an accessible tool that for as little as a few $100 per month that you can import your data from your DMS or your CRM and at least begin to do some analysis as to who your donors are and what sorts of segments make the best sense to engage in a variety of ways. There's built-in models, and there's also the ability to kind of tweak some of that if you've got some folks that are, you know, kind of interested in tweaking some things around. And as our own technology evolves, we'll add more of those features. And clearly, as an organization's file becomes more sophisticated, and there could potentially be other external data sources. If you were a hospital and you wanted to bring in not just your donor database, but perhaps your Epic database, you know, there's ways that we can do that. And again, that's varying levels of sophistication. I think our job is to simplify as best we can and make it as accessible as we can for the smallest of organizations up to the largest, most sophisticated organizations that might have some heavier needs for that. It's an exciting time.
It is indeed. Trent, Hillary, any parting thoughts to add?
Not that I can think of, other than the fact that it's just my only charge to nonprofit organizations is that, you know, learn what you can so you understand some of the lingo. But what I find frequently about a topic like this is board members that are working for commercial organizations are obviously ahead of the curve for nonprofits. And so sometimes they'll throw around, you know, what are we doing in artificial intelligence? And you know, how are we applying it? You need to be aware. You need to have some literacy in this area because it's not going anywhere. Data and analytics is progressing further and further into, again, the applicability where the intelligence side of it is going to be very important. We will look to the intelligence of data in a few years from now, the same way that at one point we were looking at, do you have your website yet? And at some point, everybody's got a website. Data is that ubiquitous and it's that important. One of the things that struck me as we were talking about this earlier in the year is that whether nonprofit organizations understand it yet or not, every nonprofit organization already is a data company. And that is going to be something that is like, how is that even possible? Well, no, you are. You have constituents. The lifeblood of your organization is through the constituent engagement that you have. And if you're a nonprofit that has kind of a customer base, like a patient or a student or a museum patron or whatever it might be, that's a revenue source. It's also a data point, as well as those that are donors. And there's also a ton of nonprofit organizations where there isn't a consumer transaction, but they're solely supported by individual or corporate donations or grants, et cetera. So you're a data company today, whether you know it or not. So the sooner that you recognize that and you use your data in ways that can actually help you be more resourceful, more effective, more efficient, and start applying, and to Hillary's earlier point, dipping your toe in the pool at the slightest of ways, then the better educated you will be as this begins to continue to unfold and the sophistication becomes more simplified, but the sophistication of the technology behind it is going to get more and more rich and more sophisticated. Hillary, would you add anything to that?
Yeah, I think I would just say don't get paralyzed by the language or what you perceive to be over sophistication. Just try, take a step in that direction. And if you need to bounce ideas by somebody, feel free to call Pursuant. We're happy to talk you through it. And we have some tools that can help you as well.
Thank you both for your time today.
Thank you, Leah. Have a great day.